The human eye is an amazing organ. It's through our eyes that we receive most of the information we process about the world around us. And because of that, for most people, our eyes are perhaps the most valuable organ, if you will, in that way, in terms of functioning in the outside world. But our eyes don't work, they don't function the way most people think they do. Most of us are probably aware that because of the physics of optics, the image that's on the back of our eye is actually upside down. Our brain turns that image around, and we see it the way that it is. There have been interesting studies that have been done on this in psychology with glasses that can actually turn the image the other way. So it reverses it before it hits our eye so that it's right side up on the back of our eye. Eventually, the brain can process that as well. So it's remarkable how all of that works. Another interesting fact is that we don't see everything we think we see within our field of vision. That is, that our brain tends to focus on what we think is the most important thing that we're supposed to see. Magicians and unscrupulous salesmen count on this, right? Because they know that we will not. This is also a reason why in court testimony, increasingly, not as much weight is given to eyewitness testimony, because they can see something and actually process it improperly because of what they're thinking, what they think is happening, any number of things. There's also an interesting video out that many of you may have seen. And let me just set the stage here a little bit. Mr. Whitetalk's going to start this for me here in a moment. I think you have to hover the cursor over the block, and it will show the start button. Yeah, all right, so give me just a second. All right, there was an interesting study that was done, I think it's been over 10 years ago now, and psychologists wanted to see if indeed we saw everything that we think we see. So in this video, it will explain, but I'll say as well, what you need to do is count, it's people passing a basketball. Now you need to count how many times they pass this basketball. So, Mr. Whitetalk, if you'll start that.
This is a test of selective attention. Count how many times the players wearing white pass the basketball.
This was a psychology test done a number of years ago, and the effort was to show what you don't see. So count the basketball as it's passed. How many passes? Keep counting. Okay. Now, say to yourself how many you got. Don't have to say it out loud. Did you get 15? Okay. Now, the next question's coming up. Did you see the gorilla? All right. There he is. See, he walked right through the middle. Most people, when they watch this video, do not see the gorilla, because their brain is focused on one aspect, and that is counting the passes. This is a very interesting thing. All right, I'll give you a little quick joke here that will illustrate this as well. I think everyone's familiar with Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson. They were out camping one time, and after a good meal and a bottle of wine, they laid down for the night, they went to sleep, and some hours later, Holmes woke up, and he nudged his doctor companion next to him, and he says, "Watson, look up and tell me what you see." So Watson looked up, and he replied, "I see millions and millions of stars. What does that tell you?" Watson pondered for a moment, and he said, "Well, astronomically, it tells me that there are millions of galaxies, potential billions of planets. Astrologically, I observe Saturn is in Leo. Horologically, I deduce the time is approximately 3:15 in the morning. Theologically, I can see that God is all-powerful and that we are small and insignificant. Meteorologically, I suspect that we'll have a beautiful day tomorrow." "Why, what does that tell you?" Holmes replies, "Watson, you idiot, someone has stolen our tent." He didn't see it, did he? He saw everything else, like the passes, didn't see it. There on the screen, you see an image of an eye, and you can see where that optic nerve exits at the back. And we talked about why you don't see that. Well, that spot is called a scotoma, S-C-O-T-O-M-A. That's the spot where the optic nerve goes out. And this is where our brain processes this. But as I mentioned, we're not really seeing a complete picture physically, and sometimes even what our brain processes. But still, nonetheless, our brain functions this way through the eyes. Sometimes we don't know what we're seeing. Oftentimes when people will report certain fantastic things, what they're trying to do is put something familiar to something unfamiliar that we don't know how to process. We know something's there. We don't know what it is. Our brain fills in information, and it will find something related, something familiar in our memory, and then we'll fill it in. Another interesting thing is that we don't always actually physically see all the information. This is a classic eye test. If you've been to a doctor, you probably have looked at this before. How many see the number inside the field? How many don't see the number? Okay, good. We don't have any colorblind people here. This is one of the most, I won't say popular, that's not the right word, common. This is one of the most common of color blindness, and that is red and green. The eye will see it as the red or the green as a mixture of brown, and they're close enough they can't differentiate between the two. And so that's a related vision issue. In this case, the brain is not processing all of the color spectrum, and so the eye is not seeing something that is there. This becomes very interesting, especially with traffic lights, as you can imagine. And most people compensate simply because in most countries, red's at the top, green's at the bottom. And so they know based on position which light is on at that time. All of this is interesting on a physical level, but what if we consider all of this on a spiritual level? What things are in front of us, spiritually speaking, that we don't see? What things do we fill in when a spiritual truth is in our spiritual scotoma? The scotoma is that blind spot on the back of our eye where that nerve goes in. What don't we see when something's right there in that area of our vision? What spiritual things do we not see because we're not tuned into the right part of the spectrum, like the color blindness test? Well, we're going to look at that today. We're going to look at spiritual blind spots. If I can get my slide to advance here. There we go. And consider this topic of spiritual blind spots, because everyone has a blind spot. No matter how old you are, no matter how educated you are, no matter how many years or even decades of theological training you've had in God's church. Let's begin then by looking at five types. We're going to go through a series of stages, and that's why I wanted to do a slide presentation today so that you can follow along more easily. And the first one is simply a skill blind spot. This is the first of the five. And if you'll turn with me to 1 Corinthians 13, the Apostle Paul is addressing an issue that the congregation at Corinth had. In the previous chapter, he's talking about spiritual gifts that God had given them. And that alone was amazing. But the problem was that they were not using these gifts properly. They were using it to belittle one another, to hurt one another, to feel superior to one another, any number of things. And so Paul then addresses in verse 12, after he goes through those gifts, and then in chapter 13, talking about what is the important thing to keep in mind, that is love above all of these other gifts. In 1 Corinthians 12, verse 13, he says, "For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know just as I am known." That is, we don't see ourselves as other people see us. Have you ever listened to a recording of your own voice? Maybe you've recorded your voicemail and you have to call in, and sometimes you hear that message yourself. I always remember the first time I had that happen. This was years ago, back when we still had cassette tapes. And for speech class at college, we had to record a speech and then we had to listen to it. We had to give our own critique back to the instructor. And I listened to myself, and I thought I sounded like Charlie Brown. How many remember those Charlie Brown specials? You know, I thought I sounded like Charlie Brown. Because even we don't hear ourselves right. We're not just hearing auditorially. We also hear sound through our bones. When we talk through the skin, that travels up to the ear. So what we hear as our voice is different from what other people hear. Paul is addressing this as well, that we have to be careful because we can have a skill blind spot. That's what was happening in chapter 12 and what Paul is beginning to address here in chapter 13. They thought, because they had a particular spiritual gift, whatever it was, that that was all they needed. And they were missing a skill, a necessary skill in so many other areas. God had blessed them tremendously. They could speak in languages. They could discern prophecy, teach it, understand future events. Some were well enough off financially that they could give liberally to others. Some had tremendous expressions of faith. But they were all coming up short because they had one major blind spot. And that is, for chapter 13, they didn't have God's love in how they used them. Even if we're spiritually gifted, we can have a blind spot. For the Corinthians, to use verse 12, they were looking at themselves through a dirty mirror. You know, we do that. We get out of the shower, the bathtub, and the bathroom. If you don't have an exhaust fan, you know, your mirror's all fogged. And you can rub it, and it will clear it a little bit. But if it's still humid in there, it'll start to fog again. And this is kind of what happens here. Let's turn next to John chapter 8. John chapter 8 and verse 31. The Pharisees, and it can be easy to pick on them in this regard, and that's not my intent. But they had blind spots as well. We're going to read one here. John 8, verse 31. Christ is addressing, many different things as he leads up to this. And so to break into the thought, verse 31, Christ said to those Jews who believed him, "If you live in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And they answered, "We're Abraham's descendants, and we have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will make us free?" And Jesus answered, "Most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And a slave does not live in the house of the house forever, but a son does live forever. Therefore, if the son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. I know that you are Abraham's seeds or descendants, but you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. I speak what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have seen with your fathers." And they said to him, now notice, this is where they go with this. You know, they don't like what he's saying, so rather than state a concern, they attack. And they said, Christ says, "If you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of your father. But now you seek to kill me. You do the deeds of your father." Verse 41, they said, "We were not born of fornication." That's their response. Okay, I can dismiss you because you're illegitimate. Okay, so what was it they didn't see? Well, I find it astounding that in verse 33, they say, "We've never been in bondage." Okay, they forgot thousands of years of their history, didn't they? The Egyptians, the Persians, the Romans, even during this time, they were under subjugation to the Romans. Maybe not slaves in the classic definition, but they were not free to run their country the way they wanted. And the fact that he says, "You seek to kill me." They saw no disconnect there, that they could plot and scheme and encourage others to kill and not see that they were culpable in that very same thing. They thought their skill was their inheritance, their genealogy. "I'm descended from Abraham. That's all that I need. I have the law. I have the temple. I have whatever." And they thought that that gave them a pass on everything else. But they couldn't see their own shortcomings. All right, the second item then is a knowledge blind spot. This is also what I would call the know-it-all outlook. One of the interesting things about the sinking of the Titanic was that when it was built, they built it, they marketed it as an unsinkable ship. I think most of us are aware of that. And for the technology of the day, it was very well built. But the problem was they did not make it watertight from level to level. They made it watertight from room to room. In other words, laterally, not vertically. Okay, so they hit the iceberg. The captain believes the press. This ship is unsinkable. So he thought, all right, we've got damage, but it's okay. We can close off the compartments. Those will flood. We'll just continue sailing to New York. We'll fix it when we get there. Well, it didn't happen that way, because as those rooms took on water, then it began to push the bow down, and now it began to move from level to level. Now he had a problem on his hands. Well, by the time he realized the marketing was wrong, this ship was going to sink, he called for help. It was too late. There were ships that, had he called when they hit the iceberg, they could have arrived well before the ship sank, and they could have evacuated virtually everybody. There were several ships that were nearby. By the time he called them, it took them too long to get there. By the time they did get there, the people in the water were all dead. The only people alive were the few that managed to get into the lifeboats. The captain had a knowledge blind spot, didn't he? He thought he had all the information he had. So presented with a scenario that challenged that, he basically said, no, that's not the case. Let's look at 1 John. 1 John chapter 1. Spiritually, we have to be careful of this as well. Sometimes we can think we have all of the information, all of the knowledge that we need, and we can get into trouble because we don't. 1 John 1 and in verse 8, John here writes, "If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us." This is easy for us to do spiritually. Well, I've been a baptized member for, you know, however long it's been, you know, years or decades. And I know better than that. Okay, well, John here is putting a pretty fine point to this. If we say we have no sin, see, we begin to look at ourselves from a different perspective. The way God views us is different than the way we view ourselves. See, we don't see our own blind spots. We don't see that spot in the back of our eye where the brain is filling in information. And we have to be careful that we don't think that we're better than we are. I'm reminded of the example of the sons of Aaron. If you remember, they died because they offered profane fire before him. Okay, he gave them very specific instruction. All right, they had knowledge. Go back and read the account back in Leviticus 10. They had the censers. They had the coals. They had the incense. They had the right garments. They did everything right except the fire. The fire was not from the altar. And so when they did this, God needed to make it very clear he's serious about the details. And so he killed them. What was probably really hard for Aaron especially was that God says, "Do not mourn for them." And so then he had to carry on from there. They had a knowledge blind spot. In that case, it cost them literally their lives. We're here in 1 John. Let's turn back a little bit to James. James 1 and in verse 22. James 1 verse 22. James writes here, he says, "But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves." See, this is another knowledge blind spot that I've seen played out, and I suspect every one of you have as well. That someone that simply thinks that if they come and hear, they have all that they need. James is saying that's incomplete. That's a huge blind spot, because if we don't act on it, if we don't implement it and make it part of our lives, then we're deceiving ourselves. And there were a lot of people that thought they were very well grounded. I've known people from years ago that were in the church 20, 30 years or more. And then something came along that challenged them because they weren't enough of a doer. It undid their faith. They walked away. The third item then is, there we go, unbalanced. Being unbalanced. Let's go back to John. There were many things that the Pharisees were unbalanced in. That was part, to a large degree, that was part of what Christ was trying to address with them. But in John 9 and in verse 35, Christ says this to him. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. Now, this was the man that had been healed, and they didn't like the way Christ had done it. And so they kicked this young man out of the synagogue, essentially. And so word got back to Christ that this is what the leadership had done to this man that had been healed. And so it says, when Christ heard that they cast him out, he went and found him. And he, Christ, said to the man that was healed, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" And the man answered and said, "Who is he that I may believe in him?" The qualified yes. Verse 37, Jesus says, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." And so then he brightens up and he says, "Lord, I do believe." So verse 39, Christ says, "For judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those that who do see may be made blind." Notice in verse 40, some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words, and they said, "Are we blind also?" Not a bad question. But they show their blindness by their unwillingness to listen to Christ. And so Christ, verse 41, says, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, 'We see,' therefore your sin remains." Right? Because you say you have it all figured out, but you're not balanced, you're not seeing where you are falling short. I mean, the very fact that the leadership had kicked this man out of the synagogue simply because he was healed. Yes, they were blind, but they were unwilling and they were unable. In that regard, they had knowledge, but they were unbalanced. They weren't seeing the whole picture. They were out of round. This blind spot manifests itself oftentimes in a person being hypocritical. They think they've got it all figured out, and if people try to point things out to them, they don't see it. Let's look at Matthew 23. Matthew chapter 23 and in verse 25. Interesting exercise if you want to go back to chapter 23 later and do some personal study. Count how many times Christ says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees." That's a very strong correction that he's giving them. He does it repeatedly in this chapter. So Matthew 23 and verse 25, he starts out that way. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." You know, they probably didn't like hearing that. But he was not going to equivocate. He was not going to say it in such a way that they were not clear on his position. He's telling them they're being unbalanced here. They're being hypocritical. He says, "For you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish." And they had all manner of regulations, washing hands up to the elbows in a certain manner, and even washing their eating utensils, that it had to be done a certain way in a certain prescribed manner. And Christ says, "Look, you do that. You go through all of that." But he said, "But inside you're full of extortion and self-indulgence." You can justify a lot internally, can't you? All of us can. This is one of the big things that they were guilty of. They were unbalanced. Outwardly, they would go through all the right motions. Inwardly, nothing changed. Christ was very pointed in this. So then verse 26, he says, "Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and the dish, that the outside of them may be clean as well." Right? If you start out with something dirty, even if you put it in something clean, it's not going to make any difference. Verse 27, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you're like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness." Right? Rotting corpses. Looks good on the outside, not so pleasant on the inside. Verse 28, "Even so you outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." You know, look at the example that we read of the blind man. Why would they not be happy this man had been healed? No longer did he have to beg at the temple to have a means of survival. The woman who was healed from the issue of the blood, because Christ did on the Sabbath, they didn't want to hear about that. You know, we could go down the list of things that he did they should have been happy about, but because it wasn't done the way they thought it needed to be done, or if it was done at all, they didn't like it. Verse 29, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, 'If we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would have not been partakers of them in the blood of the prophets.'" And he says, "Therefore you are witnesses against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets." And what did they do? They murdered the most important prophet. They weren't any better than their fathers. They thought they were. This is the unbalanced nature. I found this quote a few weeks ago when I was putting this together. I posted it on Facebook. I really like this quote. And it goes this way. "If you're going to be two-faced, at least make one of them pretty." That was Marilyn Monroe. We're really good at seeing what we don't have and not seeing what we do have. That can run the spectrum on any number of things. But we have to be careful that we're not missing what we do have. If it's unbalanced, if it's knowledge, if it's these other things that we talked about. All right, so the next item then is the assumption blind spot. I'm trying to think which example I want to use here. I've got several here. Let's go to 1 Samuel 15. 1 Samuel 15. When Saul was made king, initially he was very humble, very receptive to the instruction, didn't think highly of himself. That's to a large degree why God chose him. But also the people wanted him. The people were taken by his size, by his handsomeness, by a number of different things. But one of the things that got Saul into trouble was that he assumed things. And this is one example. In 1 Samuel 15 and in verse 10. It says, "Now the word of the Eternal came to Samuel, saying, I greatly regret that I have set up Saul as a king, for he has turned back from following me, has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel. And he cried out to the Lord all night." This is Samuel beseeching God on Saul's behalf. "And when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel, and indeed he has set up a monument for himself and has gone on around, passed by, and gone down to fight, gone down to Gilgal. Then Samuel went to Saul, and Saul said to him, Blessed are you of the Eternal. I have performed the commandment of the Lord. But Samuel said, Then what is the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" See, God had given Saul a directive to go kill the Amalekites. And he said, not to spare any of them. Men, women, children, livestock, all of it. Just put it all to death. And Saul kept the best. So he says this, "I have done all that God asked me to do." And Samuel says, "Wait a minute, I hear all this livestock. What do you mean you've done all that God asked you to do?" So then verse 15, he begins to justify. Because Saul made an assumption. It's not really what God meant. And it's okay if I keep these and then offer them. So verse 15, Saul says, "They have brought them from the Amalekites." To make matters worse, he blamed others. "For the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Eternal, your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." And Samuel said to Saul, "Be quiet, and I will tell you what the Eternal has said to me last night." And so then Saul says, "Speak on." Samuel said, "When you were little in your own eyes, not head of the tribes of Israel, were you not head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, Go utterly destroy the sinners and fight against them till they're consumed. Why did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord?" Saul said to Samuel, "But I have obeyed." He assumed that he could do it his own way. That was not what God asked him to do. "I've gone on the mission which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, king of Amalek, and I've utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took the plunder." And so he passes this off. In verse 22, then Samuel says, "Has the Lord as great a delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Eternal? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams, for rebellion is the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you." Now, before verse 24, Saul realizes he was wrong. But now he assumes that he can just simply make it right. So in verse 24, he says, "I have sinned. I have transgressed the commandment because I feared the people. Now, verse 25, pardon my sin." But Samuel said, verse 26, "I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you." Too late. Too little, too late. We have the example in 2 Samuel 11 of David and Bathsheba. David assumed because he was king, he could do whatever he wanted. He saw Bathsheba, he lusted after her, that was bad enough. He convinced her to sleep with him, she got pregnant. Then he realized he had a difficulty here with her being married, so then he sets up the whole scenario for Uzziah to be killed. Uriah, sorry. All the time thinking that because he was king, he could do it. Well, other kings could. But David wasn't just any king. He was God's anointed. And it got him into deep trouble, didn't it? He assumed, I can have whatever I want. And God even said, was it so little that I gave you? If you had asked, I would have given you more. Maybe we can see these examples as extreme, but how many times has God clearly shown each of us, individually, what we're to do before him? And we've assumed that he's not serious. Oh, just this once, or I don't think he really meant it that way, or all of this justification, the assumptions that we can make. How many times have we asked God for insider direction? And when it comes, we ignore it because we assume that we assume God would give us what we want, not what we need. Something to be careful about. The last item here as we set this up, life will always be as it was, and I can always do what I have always done. Blind spot. That is, we think that everything is always going to be the same, and we can always do what's always gone before. Well, we have the example, if you want to write Matthew 25. I think most of us are familiar with the parable there of the 10 virgins. They thought life would just go on. The interesting thing is that they all knew roughly where to be. They all knew roughly when Christ was returning. They all knew they needed their oil and their lamps. But half of them were unprepared. They thought they would have enough time, that life would always go on. Now, I've seen the opposite of that. Because life would go on, people think that they can walk away and come back to it later. That's equally as dangerous. But I've seen people go through this as well, that they think that they have enough time and they just put it off. They put off addressing what God is showing them in their lives. They put off addressing living his word, developing faith, growing strong in his way of life. And then when the time comes, they're not as strong as they thought they were. Luke chapter 21. Luke 21 and in verse 34. Christ has this to say. He says, but take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly. Now, that's a strong enough caution to us, but it even applies to the world. The world has really rejected God's instruction. They look at it and say, well, as is even recorded in Scripture, we've always had these things. People have always been dying. We've always had wars. We've always had difficulties, whatever. God's not serious about this. In fact, I don't even think God cares or even exists. And so they continue with life as it always was. I can only imagine how shocked, and there's no way of knowing how many numbers, but let's just say hundreds of thousands of people were standing outside of Noah's Ark when that door was closed, and they thought, oh, he's just such an old fool. And then everything went sideways for them, didn't it? And there was no changing it. Verse 35, for it will come, speaking of that day, it will come as a snare on all of those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Things do change. Life changes, doesn't it? Life doesn't stay static. We can have a good job, and then management changes, and we get a new boss, and everything's different. Right? We can have a new car that has no mechanical problems, and we get in an accident, and then it gets repaired, and it's one problem after another. Life changes. Revelation 3:3 talks about this in the same regard, that time will come as a thief in the night. And as Christ said, the thing about a thief is that if you know he's coming, you're going to be prepared, right? You're going to lock your house, you're going to put away your valuables, you're going to be on guard, you're going to pay attention. You don't know when a thief comes. That's by definition what they do. They sneak in and take it when you don't expect. Events in the world change the way things are. Technology changes. Look at what's changed in technology in the last 20 years. You know, we have more, any of us that have a computer on our lap here, you have more technology, more power in that laptop than was used to put the first man on the moon. Can you imagine that? Pretty scary when you think about it. We have more technology in our cars in some cases. You know, we're at a place where Roxanne needs to replace her van. It's 17 years old and it's seen its days. Right? So we're out shopping for some new cars. Everything's touchscreen in the new cars. You know, everything's electronic. Everything's touch buttons. Things change. Life doesn't stay static and locked in one place, having one perspective. We have to stay engaged. So why do we have blind spots? We can know how the eye functions, but it doesn't negate the fact that the blind spot's there. Spiritually, we can look at things and we can know that there are blind spots, but we still may not pay attention to them. Well, like our eye, our brain fills in information when we're missing something. Sometimes it fills in the right information, sometimes it doesn't fill in the right information. We have blind spots because we simply cannot see everything, we cannot know everything, we cannot be everywhere, and we cannot always have all of the information we might need. It simply doesn't happen. We're human. Even if we could have all of the information and know everything and be everywhere and do all that, we'd be crippled, wouldn't we? Think about all of the information that would be there that we would have to process to come to a decision. It'd be overwhelming. Well, while we ponder that, let's look at some cautions of how to make a blind spot worse. Hope you can read that well enough. I'll read it to you if you can't. These are responsibility-avoiding expressions. If someone comes and says, I see this and that that you're dealing with, and I think I can help. The way to make it worse is to say, I didn't realize, I had no idea. That's deflecting. May not be initially, but it can be. It can be very off-putting. That's not what I meant. I never said that. I tell my kids all the time, you need to listen to what I mean, not what I say. We have a habit of not expressing ourselves well, don't we? Or we'll blame it on others, like Saul did. They're the ones at fault. You know, we can also use this in another way, saying, well, I'm not so bad. He's worse. We do this comparison business. Or the ultimate is, well, that's just who I am. I really hated that one years ago, especially in business. Why do we do this? Well, that's just the way we've always done it. I don't care. It's broken. It doesn't work. Basically, all of those things have something in common. What is it they have in common? It's a lack of humility. To use some other words, a lack of teachability, a lack of accountability. It's not our fault. It's not our problem. It's not something we need to address. So let's go back to the point. How do we overcome this? Even if we don't see it, but especially if we do, how do we overcome this? Well, the first there is to be accountable to others. Let's look at Proverbs 27. We can understand this spiritually, intellectually, but it's very difficult to listen to humanly. We don't like to be corrected. In Proverbs 27 and verse 6, this is the proverb, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Now, what does that mean? Well, a more modern translation, like the contemporary English version, has it this way. You can trust a friend who corrects you, but kisses from an enemy are nothing but lies. Right? We need to pay attention to those people who we know truly want to help us. People that want to flatter us or get something from us, they'll say whatever they think we want to hear. So, being accountable. Job chapter 5, let's go there. Before the book of Psalms, Job 5, and in verse 17. Behold, happy is the man whom God corrects. Therefore, do not despise the chastening of the Almighty. Again, we don't like to hear that, do we? Oftentimes, we're not very happy when God's in that process. We're happy afterwards. Verse 18, for he bruises, but he binds up. See, this is what God can do especially. We may feel wounded. We may feel injured. We may feel overwhelmed. But God's the one walking us through the process. He's the one that will make sure it comes out right. He wounds, but his hands make whole. The one I especially like in this regard is back in the book of Jude. And Jude is just one chapter. So Jude 1, verse 23. Jude, verse 23. It's talking about our own relationship with God, but by extension then how we're to function with others. So to break into the thought a little bit, in verse 23 it says, but others, previously in verse 22 it says, with some you can have compassion, you can make these distinctions, verse 23, but with others, save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment defiled by the flesh. Now, when I was a boy, we always had the one end of the house heated by a fireplace, later by a wood stove. Sometimes you'd throw something in the fire and realize you didn't want to do that. You know, a piece of paper that you needed to keep, it had a note on it or something. You had a stack of papers you were burning. You'd quickly grab it, right? Try to pull it out of the fire. Well, do we see what others will try to do for us as something like this? They don't want to see us hurt more than we are. And they're trying to help. Because we can't assume that we're always right. If something's pointed out, especially in times of conflict, that's the time when we need to stop and consider what's being said. Even if we are right, do we have to make sure that the other person knows they're wrong? We like to rub that in, don't we? See, I wasn't wrong. All right, the next item in this list is to be to self-examine. Let's go to 1 John. We're not far from that. 1 John 1 and verse 9. 1 John 1, verse 9. We read this earlier. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we are faithful to confess our sins. We can read verses like this, especially around or preceding the time of Passover, and say, as we often do, that this examination is not just for the time around Passover. And that's all well and good. But how often do we actually take the time, other times of the year, to actually go through that process as well? Here's a challenge for you. Identify at least one thing this coming week that you need to change. It's an easy one. If others are telling you the same thing, what is it maybe that others have been telling you? In subtle ways, maybe not so subtle ways. That might be something that needs to be addressed. 2 Corinthians 13:5 is the verse we oftentimes turn to around Passover. 2 Corinthians 13:5, where it says, to examine yourself, to acknowledge a blind spot can help us see what we previously didn't. There's a very interesting thing that can happen with your eyes as well. When I was a very young boy, and I don't remember whose property it was, but my dad, my brothers, my grandfather, we were going to visit somebody's property. And it was in the springtime. We'd had a lot of rain. Plus, as you know, with snow melt, ground can be very saturated. And so you get very high rivers, if not flood stage. Well, this particular person we were visiting, normally the river was low enough that you could just drive across, was like a creek actually, you could just drive across the creek. He had concrete, so it was a sure footing underneath, and it'd be a little bit of water that would trickle over this. But it was flooding that way, so we couldn't walk across that. But he had a rope bridge that you could walk across. Now, I'd never walked across a rope bridge, but I thought it was pretty cool, you know, that you could just... You know, it's basically a triangle, right? You're walking on the one down at the bottom, you've got the two on either side. I found this so fascinating. I got out in the middle of this creek, and the water was moving so quickly that I just wanted to look at it. I thought it was really neat. And the more I looked at the water and stayed focused on a spot, the rope actually disappeared out of my vision. Now, my dad sees me out there. I'm stopped, and I'm just staring off. He thinks I'm frozen. Right? He thinks I'm panicked and I can't move. So he comes out to get me. I was really upset that he made me move on because that was really cool. I thought that was really neat. But until you acknowledge something that is there, we can't really address it, right? We can't do any better than what we are currently doing. Here's something to keep in mind as well. Jeremiah chapter 10. The obvious individual, if you will, to go to ask to help you see a blind spot is God. He knows us better than we know ourselves. There's a caution in this, though, as we read this verse. Jeremiah 10, verse 24. This is Jeremiah, and he says, O Lord, correct me, but with justice, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. That first part of the verse is very interesting. Have you ever asked God to correct you? Now, this is where the caution comes in. Because I've known individuals who have asked God at times, they say, you know what, life is going too smoothly. I'm going to ask God for a trial. I had one guy say that to me, and I said, do you really want to ask that? And he said, well, why? I said, well, God just might answer that one. No, that's what I want. So sure enough, he got a major trial. It's not wrong to ask God, but do what Jeremiah did here. He said, but with justice, you know, temper it, ease me into it, God. And don't make it so overwhelming that I can't come out of it. Not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. See, God's not opposed to that. His point is not to overwhelm us. He wants us to see so that we can address, so that we can grow. Because blind spots only persist when we refuse to acknowledge them. I found an interesting quote from Lachlan McLean. He's one of these promotional speakers that are out there. And he says, you can only lead others where you yourself are prepared to go. You can only lead others where you yourself are prepared to go. If you're not prepared to see your own blind spots, if any of us are not prepared to see our blind spots, then we can't really help others very effectively with that, can we? Because blind spots prevent us from being safe, from seeing what God is trying to show us. Ignoring blind spots prevents us from learning, from growing, from having the relationship with God, with his called out ones that he wants us to have. Lastly, let's look at 2 Timothy as we wrap this up. 2 Timothy chapter 3. God calls us because we're not complete. He calls us because he wants us to be in his family. But in that calling, we have a responsibility to change, to grow, to overcome, not to stay as we were. That was one of the blind spots we talked about. 2 Timothy 3, and in verse 14, Paul writes this, but you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them. Verse 15, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. All Scripture is given by inspiration of God. It is profitable for teaching, it's doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. Notice why. This is why we go through this. This is why God has us assemble on the Sabbath, the holy days. This is why we need to make sure we maintain our Bible study and our prayer before God. We go through all of this, notice verse 17, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped. Not partially, not with a number of blind spots, thoroughly equipped for every good work. For our physical eyes, the more information we have, and the more information we've been exposed to, the more our brain can assist in those blind spots. Spiritually, the more discernment and correction we are offered, the more we're able to fill in those blind spots as well. So let's pay attention to our spiritual blind spots. And in doing so, grow into the whole man that God desires us to be.